And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba the Bloom, episode 210. Gonna do a little best ball primer, more importantly, underdog primer to get you ready for the 2024 season. The Dinger was released about a week or so ago, so it's time to get going in the best ball streets. We'll have some fun with that. We'll have more on that as the show goes on. But before we get to all that, you can follow me on Twitter at BDEntrick, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and on Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom. And my co-host, as always, on Twitter at RyanBHQ, Ryan Bloomfield. How are we doing, my friend?
We're trying to warm up. We're trying to warm up down here. It's cold outside, and as of about 5-10 minutes ago, all I was wearing was a tuxedo t-shirt. So got the hoodie back on.
Hope you had pants
I was wearing pants too, but
I was about to say, whoa, things started off interesting on this show.
Below the screen is legit. Don't worry. But no, we both.
I'll take your word for it, buddy.
Already starting the show with grace, of course. Yes. No, we just had our listener league announcement, assignments that we dressed up for in true Grammys fashion. So that was fun. But yeah, it was cold. So I got the hoodie back on.
Yeah, Ryan went tuxedo up top, half Kanye's wife on the bottom. So tons of fun there. Yeah, it's great. We have the 10 leagues. Just for anybody keeping track, we're still looking for 5 more players that want to be in the listener leagues. Not going to get to the details of all that, but if you're interested to get in the listener leagues, either be a paid or free Patreon, just reach out to us. Let us know. 5 spots left, the 150 total players. 10 leagues went from 4 leagues to 10 leagues. Pretty awesome stuff. 5 spots remaining. It'll be the final 3 drafts. We'll get you set up, all that kind of good stuff. But we have 7 full. We will fill these last couple without a problem. But if you're interested, first come, first serve, contact Ryan, myself, sign up for the Patreon, do all the good stuff. We'll take care of it.
We were in between 9 and 10 leagues. I remember going back and forth. He was like, I don't want to turn anyone away. So let's create that 10th league. We'll fill it out. But yeah, if you're interested, it's the dates for the drafts would be the 28th of February, 27th, and then 26th, which is your league. So those are the 3 dates we still have available. Yeah, if interested, just hit us up. We'll get you in.
Yes, indeed. We will take care of that. And more importantly, we got to talk some Baseball HQ. It is draft season, as most know. Over at Baseball HQ right now, they have the draft prep subscription going on there. It gets you full site access from now until the end of April. So you get a full month in the regular season as well to get things cracking. We're both doing our columns. Everybody else is too. It's basically full go. Projections, more of the Babs stuff just dropped from Ron Chandler this past week, which is really, really cool stuff because it's obviously way more in depth than what I like to do, but I do like to compare players throughout a draft and whatnot of where you can take guys and try to find those quote unquote pockets of value. And that is one way to kind of help steer you in that direction. If you would like to take part in the draft prep subscription, use promo code Bubba Bloom, all one word, BUBBABLOOM. Get $10 off the draft prep subscription over at baseballhq.com.
I am actually using, so we just started our first pitch Arizona speakers draft and hold, and I am taking Ron Chandler's Babs system out for a ride in that league. So we just launched a bunch of that information and spreadsheets and whatever on HQ that's available to anyone that's a subscriber this week. So pretty exciting stuff, and I'm giving it a test run out of the 8 slot in this 15 team draft and hold. So we'll see how it goes, but yeah, that's all included for subscribers. Promo code Bubba Bloom. You know, you have to put up with my writing, with Bubba's writing, but the rest of it, you know, the rest of it's pretty good.
Yeah, the rest of it is pretty, pretty, pretty cool. All right, let's talk underdog. I love underdog. I've been degenerately playing underdog pretty much since they started out. I was doing the $5 contest, and I maxed the bunt, the $3.20 max. That already filled. There'll be a bunt 2 coming out. We'll talk formats. We'll talk contests. We'll talk more shortly. But to get us started here, Ryan, just general underdog thoughts, I guess, before we really dig in.
So when you say you maxed out the bunt, what does that mean?
I did 20 entries. It's a 20 max.
Oh, it's only 20. All right.
Yeah, no, I don't do the 150 max. I do have a level of self-control, but I probably would if I could. But the 20 max is easy. Just fill it up. And I do the opposite of what some do, because you can do the live draft where it's like a 30-second clock, or you can do the slow draft where it's 8-hour clocks. I just did 20 slow drafts for the bunt, and basically, because I don't have time to sit there all day, but every time I open up my Underdog app, I'm usually up in one or two drafts. So it works out really well, and I've almost finished a couple of them already. I know they take a while for some. They don't enjoy it, but yeah, it works for me and my busy schedule.
As do the quick drafts. That's what I do, like 30, 45 minutes, and these best ball drafts. And tonight, we'll talk. I mean, we're talking about best ball, but really under the umbrella of Underdog, because that's what I have used the most. You have persuaded me, I guess, to do my stuff on there, and it's a ton of fun. So I don't know, where do you want to start? Like, do we want to start just kind of basics of best ball itself?
I'm gonna start real quick. Start with one other thing real quick with Underdog. We haven't talked about it much on this show. I talked about it on the Bench with Bubba show when I had Spencer Thurman on, but you, me, the show, we are now partners with underdog.com as well. So if you are new to Underdog and they have the season long best ball drafts, like we're going to talk about tonight in baseball, they have, over or higher or lower picks for, different sports. They have all kinds of sports. Like if you like, CSGO video games, they have that. They have cricket. They have obviously the Super Bowl's coming up. They'll have a preseason. We're gonna have an episode on this when they all drop, like higher and lower, for like home runs and stuff like that. So they have a ton of different deals for just, the over under higher lower type situations. But you have your season long best balls. They'll have daily best balls. They have a ton of great stuff. And if you're new to Underdog, use promo code Bubba Bloom, all one word, and you get a first time deposit match up to $1,000. So if you use the code, put $100 in, they'll give you another $100. Put $1,000 in, they'll give you another $1,000. So it gives you a cool way to get some free plays. Use promo code Bubba Bloom at underdog.com, and you can take part in drafts and higher lowers, all that cool stuff. Check it out. And I like throughout the season, I'll have some higher lower stuff coming out for you guys content wise. I like to do the daily ones because I started doing that when it was originally the draft app. It is really, really cool stuff. So check that out. But for the most part, Ryan's going to be focused on the season long best ball. That's what we're talking about tonight and for most of the preseason. But just want to cover all that. They have more than just the best ball for you guys that want to check things out. It's a super user-friendly app. Use promo code Bubba Bloom. First time deposit match up to $1,000. All right. All that's out of the way here. So the events that are out, and more will come, is the one that, the great buddies of ours over at Stacking Dingers, Sheep and Tuma and Baseball and Billy and all of them do. The Dinger, $10 entry. They have the Frozen Rope, $50 entry, 20 max. They have the Solo Shot, which you and I kind of like as well, $75 mm-hmm. single entry, 10K to first place. The Dinger has 100K to first place, which is pretty cool. And then, like I said, the Bunt 2 will come out. Basically, when each one fills, they'll bring another contest out and another contest out and keep filling them up. So they have those going for you. But Ryan, anything else on the contest, or do you want to talk rules or rosters, I guess?
Yeah, let's talk format. I've basically just been doing the Dinger, which is, I guess, one of their core ones. And let's talk about rules with that and just best ball, because so many of our shows are 5x5 rotisserie. This is a little bit of a change of pace because we're trying to kind of, I don't know, branch out to just not 5x5 roto every single time. So for me, the biggest thing is just a mindset change, right? There are no more categories. Best ball is all points based. Maybe we can get into some detail on that, but like, you don't need to be quote unquote balanced. Everything we talk about getting steals early, like none of that stuff really applies. It is simply points league. And for me, I mean, as most, if not all of you know, best ball, there's no in-season management at all, no fab, that sort of thing. So I just draft on my phone. It takes 30, 45 minutes and I'm done in the off season. So it's definitely a mindset change in terms of roto categories to points, and then having to adjust your rankings. And there's, I mean, we're going to cover kind of the basics tonight, but then there are, I mean, there's so much more advanced stuff out there, like stacking teams and that sort of thing. But for me, the basic thing, if you're a 5x5 roto player, is just that transition over to a points format.
Yeah, the points format is definitely one of those to keep an eye on, I would say. And if you're really curious on what the points format is, it's broken down as for pitching, a win's $5 or 5 points. But more importantly, a quality start is 5 points. We'll talk about that when we talk pitching. Strikeouts, 3 points. Innings pitched, 3 points. Earned runs, -3. So the only way you can lose points as a pitcher is giving up earned runs. But innings pitched, quality starts, wins, you can get a ton of points with pitchers in a big, big way. And then on the hitting side of things, $3 for a single, $6 for a double, $8 for, I keep saying dollars.
Points.
Good Lord, Bubba. 3 points for a single, 6 points for a double, 8 points for a triple,
that's 10 a lot of money.
Points for a home run. So it's interesting when you break that down. A triple is only 2 points less than a home run. A double is only 4 points less. Those guys that get a ton of doubles, they don't crush you in the same regard. Walks were 3 points, hit by pitch three, RBIs two, runs two, stolen base four. So you can't lose points when it comes to hitting, which is very, very interesting as well. So before we talk about rosters, anything else on the points that kind of stands out to you as well? We'll start to talk roster construction.
I mean, just like with any points format, it's obvious, but it's know what your format is. Like that's other, you know, non-underdog, other things, other formats could penalize you for strikeouts, you know, for example. And so that can hurt obviously certain guys with the underdog format. Like and we've got this in the rankings tool that we have out for the Patreon. Like it's your OBP guys, your on base guys shoot way up. So like a Judge and Juan Soto are actually ranked, I don't want to say quite a bit higher, but they're ahead of Bobby Witt, for example, where like in a 5x5 roto, you're like, I don't know about that. And then, yeah, we'll talk about some of the later on. I did some research. We'll talk about some of the most commonly owned players on successful teams last year. Your workhorse starting pitchers because of wins, because of quality starts, that matters a lot. So then that's specific to underdog, but again, just know your points formats, take that points scoring, put it into projections and do some replacement level stuff. I'll talk about that in a little bit, but just make sure everything you're looking at is tailored to that specific point format.
And that also caters to the rosters. So each underdog best ball season long best ball is 20 rounds. So you have 20 picks that you're going to make, but this is where it gets fun. Throughout your picks each week, again, Ryan said earlier, they take your best scores. You don't have to manage anything. Just draft and walk away. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. But each week they take your top three pitchers, top three infielders, three outfielders, one flex, so either an infielder or an outfielder. So you have seven hitters and three pitchers each week, 10 players on your bench. So this will also come into our discussion on how you set up your draft, essentially. Just think about the weighting we just talked about. There's seven hitters, three pitchers, so on and so forth for that. And it does definitely change the way you might approach things, Ryan. So anything on the roster before I mention the breakdown of the playoffs, et cetera?
No, it's very simple, right? You don't have catchers anymore. Like you don't have first base on the NFBC and other formats you do. But yeah, there's no multi-position guys. You're either infield or outfield, and then obviously you're a pitcher. So that just makes it very simple. I don't want to say football-like, but it kind of is, right? Like it's not the general concept is very simple. Once you get into the deeper strategies, it can get very complex. But at its core, at its surface, three positions, and like you said, you're only taking three infield, three outfield, a flex, and three pitchers every week. So that's the essence of best ball.
It is the essence of best ball, and obviously when we talk roster constructions, knowing you need more hitters and pitchers obviously could change the way you approach the positions. When Ryan shows you his rankings, it also show why pitchers might be different in the rankings than you expect as well when we look at that. But kind of to add on to that, the no multi-position stuff, like your Shohei Ohtani is an outfielder. Mookie Betts is an outfielder. He's not an infield outfield. So on, like Kyle Schwarber, outfielder. He's elite
Schwarber,
in his format due to the OBPs. Like he's a first round on the turn type pick, if not before that, depending on your draft. Those things change due to these formats. And that's something you have to definitely know. Again, we'll see that when Ryan shows us the chart and what we got going on there. But when you are doing these drafts, Ryan, what kind of general strategies do you have when you are approaching them?
There's a ton, but like you try to be unique. You try to be unique because this is kind of a lot of these contests are big. So you want to have kind of unique players. A lot of things with underdog, there are like rounds to these. So you'll probably get into that just a sec, but I actually like targeting players that maybe I just do this one or two picks out of my 20. I don't mind taking an injured guy because the way that this is structured, your first whatever 12 weeks, 16 weeks, whatever it is a scoring period. If you advance out of that, then you start from zero again and you go to the next round, and it cuts down even further from there. So taking someone like a Ronald Acuna Jr., for example, just trying to think of some names here, like someone who I would normally not take at all in a roto league, and especially like on the NFBC where there's no IL and you've got to kind of stash him. Ronald Acuna presumably will be healthy in the second half of the season when you, if you advance past that first stage. So I think it's very important to set yourself up not only for the beginning of the season, which is my mindset in roto, especially in fab leagues. It's like, well, I'm just going to, if I keep or cut, if he dies, he dies. That's fine. I can cut him and move on. That's not the case with best ball. You actually need people. You need to think about the second half of the season as much as you do the first half, which is another kind of interesting little wrinkle. So I'm actually a little bit more willing to take somebody who is starting the season injured, a Zach Neto type as well, where I can count on them presumably in the second half.
Yeah, and the reason for that is the rounds, as Ryan was mentioning, that we play here. The round one, it's long. It's rounds one, or it's weeks one through 17. Okay, so you have a long stretch to start the season. So you'll fill up points and accumulate and accumulate and accumulate. And the it's the top at the, where is it at here? We'll have four rounds. The tournament, at the end of round one, the top four entries in the group will advance to round two. So you have that going for you. So if you basically, if you almost just have to finish in the top half, because it's 10 teams, 20 rounds, 200 people drafted. So if you're in the top four after when week 17 comes to the end, you head to round two. In round two, it's only weeks 18 and 19, folks. And at the end of week 19, the top three from that pocket go to the next round. And sorry, in round one, it's 12 people drafts, 240 people. Round two is 10 people. So the top three out of the 10-person pod in round two advance to round three. Round three is weeks 20 through 21. So you have two rounds yet again, or 2 weeks yet again for round three. At the end of round three, three people leave that group, but three people leave that group, and it heads to round four, which will have 18 people in each group. No, there's 18. I'm sorry, I'm totally butchering this. There's 18 people in round three, so only three out of 18. So you went from 4 out of 12, 3 out of 10, 3 out of 18 now. So it's getting a little more complicated to advance, if that makes sense. Then you head to round four, the championship round, where it's just you play for all the gusto, and that's weeks 22 and 23. So yes, if I didn't butcher that enough for you, you need to be top four out the gate.
Just start saying more numbers and it'll, so, you know, it'll,
the league you draft, you need to be top four in that by the end of week 17. Then you get reallocated to a new league, you need to be top three in that. Then you get reallocated in a new league again, you need to be top three in that, and then you have to win the whole darn thing. So that's,
but ultimately, that's like sure, yeah, but ultimately, like, you can't control which leagues you go in the next rounds or whatever. Just know that, like, the second half. Can you repeat that? Just know that the second half is just as important as the first half.
I wasn't doing sheeps in the chat saying I was talking about the solo shot. I was not. I was in the frozen rope. So he says the dinger is much different. Let me explain the dinger to everybody as I pulled it. That's why I was thinking top two. The top four screwed me up. I'm like, what the? That's what threw me for a loop. There it is. So the dinger, so the weeks are the same, 1 through 17, 18, 19, so on and so forth. After week one, the top two in your pod, or round one, the top two in your pod advanced to round two, and this top two advanced to round three, and it's only the top one advanced to the finals, and then it's go for the gusto. So instead of, so if you play like in the other ones, it's 4-3-3-1. In the dinger, the one that everybody wants to win for 100K to first place, it is a much more dog-eat-dog world. It's 2-2-1, go for the gusto. So a lot less advance, given there's a bigger pool because there's more entries in it as well, though. So keep that in mind. Yep. All right, that was fun. Thanks for chipping in there, Sheep, because I wasn't doing the solo shot, but apparently Dinger's got a world of its own, as you mentioned. So, and I butchered that, Ryan. Why don't you show us demos of the rankings so I can go catch my breath over here?
Go get some water. Go put that tux back on.
Yeah.
All right. So I mentioned the scoring is very different than what we're used to in Roto. So what I'm going to do, especially for the YouTube crowd, is I'm going to show this is a Patreon tool, but it's basically it aggregates the different projections that are on FanGraphs, and it tailors the scoring to underdogs scoring system. So I'm going to try and share this thing, and you can just kind of see, and I'd recommend this really for any best ball league, but, obviously what I'm showing here is underdog. Can we see that? Okay. Yeah, that's fine. It's not so much the total point. So we've got every single play and what their points, projected points are for the entire season. It's not so much the total points though. It's the points above replacement. And so what I did for, at least for this Patreon tool, is I took the total points for outfield, infield, and pitcher. And I take the amount over replacement level, which is a very common, you see it in football, you see it in basically any kind of points format, common way to do it. You want to take that base replacement level and rank people by how much they are above replacement. That's how I have worded this sheet. So in this sheet, you've got total points projected above replacement at each position for outfield, infield, and pitcher. And again, this is a combination of Steamer and the bat. Going into this, and the corresponding rank, the ADP, and then in the spreadsheet, you can see the difference. So green obviously is things that players that the projections like a little bit more, and red is a little bit less. The cool thing about this is you can, I've got instructions in the sheet, so you can basically just export this to a CSV and upload it right into Underdog. And then that's one way to differentiate your set of rankings, because these drafts go very, if you're in the quick drafts, are 30 seconds. Like, you have no time to think in a 30 second clock. So it's very important, I think, to be able to kind of upload some type of rankings. I believe by default, it's by ADP and or underdogs projected points, which I'm not sure the secret sauce behind that. But I think it's nice to use a projection system that you have, order your players that way by replacement level, and then upload it in. But yeah, if you're a Patreon member, you can take this sheet. You can go to file, download, and go right into CSV, and then you can upload it right into the rankings page on Underdog, and then it's right in your draft room and you are ready to go. It's what I use. It's what I like to share the tools that I'm using. So that's available if you are part of the Patreon.
I'm going to have to do that, because something we're going to talk about later is kind of how our drafts have been going so far. So I want to do that to try it out, to see how things differentiate from what I'm doing so far. Let's put it that way. So yeah, definitely need to go do that to mix it up a bit. Maybe after I finish my 20 max on the bunt, go throw those ones out there and see where it goes from there. All right. You did some research, and I stumbled upon myself trying to describe how things advance. So I'm looking forward to this section of the show now, to see where things go here. But let's see where you go with this research. It's very good, and I want to shout out Sheeps in the chat, the Stacking Dinger guys. Like, if you want to know anything about Underdog Best Ball, you should be following them for 100%. Like, we're giving you the what we love about Underdog and how we utilize Underdog and so on and so forth. These guys like do it for almost a business the way they do. Sheep, dominates football now too, because he's like that. Pretty soon he'll qualify for NBA just the way he does things. But they have between our buddy Baseball, who we've talked to before, and I've had on Bench with Bubba and whatnot, and now they got Billy on there. They got some big, big brains doing some things, and Ryan did his version of these things as well. So I'm looking forward to seeing what Ryan has for you. But I wanted to shout them out before we go too much farther. Like, if you guys want to go even deeper into Underdog, go check out Stacking Dinger show for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Full agree. Thanks to Sheep and Billy actually for helping me a little bit with this research. Billy's in there too. I will link this to, I'll put this out on Twitter, Blue Sky tomorrow, but I'll link Billy's article that goes into a ton more detail on some of this stuff in terms of roster build and what worked and has worked the past three seasons for the Dinger. But what I wanted to throw together is just some basics on, if you haven't done an underdog draft before, you're just, what is the most common type of successful team build out there? We're going to show some of that stuff tonight. So again, just as a reminder, as Bubba was saying, these are 20 rounds and you've got three positions. You've got infield, outfield, and pitcher. So you divide 20 by 3, you basically get 7. You get some version of 6, 7, 7. Did my math there right? And that's typically the most common type of build. And again, for the YouTube crowd, this is up here. What I wanted to do is A, show everybody what the most common, and when I say build, it's your how many infielders, how many outfielders, and how many pitchers did each team draft. Wanted to show you kind of the most common ones. And unsurprisingly, it's some combination of 6 or 7 in outfield, infield, and pitcher. What I also wanted to show was of the teams that were actually successful, and you can define success any number of ways. I just did this as the top 25% of points scored in that first round, which, as Bubba was saying before he went off on his little numbers diatribe there, is the first 17 weeks of the season. I wanted to see what that top quarter, how they did, and what changed between the successful group and the entire population. So the most common build out there is 7 infielders, 6 outfielders, 7 pitchers. That's also the most common in terms of the most successful teams. Second most common is 6 infield, 7 outfield, 7 pitchers, and then third is 7, 7, 6. So typically, and that accounts for, I don't know, 45, 90. That accounts for 80-ish% of all builds is some type of combination between infield, outfield, and pitcher. What we're showing here is a percent increase. So I wanted to compare what's the difference between the successful teams and the overall field. And that's what this percent increase is. How much did you increase your percent chance of getting in to the top 25 or being a successful team versus the field? And it's interesting, these bottom two that are red, -7, -17%, are teams that only drafted 6 pitchers. I think that's one takeaway, is that you need to have 7 pitchers. There is a common build that has 8 pitchers, but then you're only limiting yourself to 6 outfielders and 6 infielders. So 8 pitchers was somewhat common. It's like 13% of all builds, but only 12.5% of those made it to the top. Were successful in the full season contest. The other two common builds that included 6 pitchers were not as successful. So I think the biggest takeaway, and Bubba, you can kind of give your thoughts on this sheet here, is to try and balance and have 6 or 7 of each position, and preferably 7 pitchers.
Yeah, for most of my builds, I was talking to you before the show, it's been 7 pitchers for sure, and it's usually 6 outfielders, 7 infielders. So it's usually 7, 6, 7 is what I call it, but different than your board. 7 pitchers, 7 outfielders, 6 infielders, which is the second one on the chart, if you guys are watching at home, is 22.5% of the top 25 and 21.2% of all drafts. It's pretty much what I'm doing every time. And the reason I want 7 pitchers, and that was before I even saw this, to show that it's probably a good idea, is we talked on just season-long stuff, the amount of injuries to pitchers,
yep,
the amount of turnovers on pitchers. Yes, you only need to start 3 per week, but if you're only having 6 and you start getting 2 injuries, now you have 4, and now you have to take 3. You have to take 3. And if it's a bad week, say a guy gets shelled and gets like 7 earned runs, well, you can just kiss a lot of things goodbye real quick. So I mean, he's not throwing a lot of innings and it's a rough week. Now, I'm not saying it's going to happen all the time, but I'd like to try to position myself in a better light. And you kind of saw a glimpse of Ryan's rankings. If you just go to an underdog draft and scroll through pitching, there's a lot of good pitching as the drafts go on. A lot. So you don't have to be super aggressive on it. We'll get into that more in a bit here, but you can still attack and get a very solid core of like 4-ish, 4 to 5, like quasi studs, and then pencil in a couple more afterwards. So that's kind of where I'm at. I go really outfield heavy. I know we did like kind of in the Discord a while back. It was like a Friday night, and I'm like, who wants to draft? We all got in a draft. And I know Michael Cicchini and some others were in there, and they're like, dude, you just took like 4 or 5 outfielders in a row or something like that. And they're like, what are you doing? And I'm like, just watch. And that was kind of my thought process in that process, because there's infielders for days. Again, we'll talk about all that. But to what you're looking at here, I kind of fall in that 7, 6, 7 program. And more importantly, I want to get 7 pitchers. The outfield infielders can fluctuate depending on how I feel about the position, but I want that 7 pitching situation. I don't want 8, because in the end, 70% of your weekly lineup is hitters. So you want more hitters to be able to take the maximum there, in my mind. So I kind of limit it in that regard.
That's what I typically do. And Billy in the chat says 8 pitchers is hard to pull off. and still have enough hitting juice, right? Because yeah, if you go with the eight hitters, you've only got 14, or sorry, eight pitchers, you've only got 14 combined hitters, and that's just, that is tough. So typically, yeah, I am always seven pitchers, and then infield, outfield, six, seven, vice versa, for me is typically team dependent. If I, whichever position I start early, and for me, that's typically outfield, I will stack that early, and then I won't go back to outfield until the last few rounds, and then vice versa on infield. If I wait on infield in the first three, four rounds or whatever, I'm going to pound infield a ton in those middle rounds and probably take a seventh infielder, right? So the position that I wait on is probably the position I'm taking that seven, as opposed to the hitting position that I go early on. I'm just going to take the six. And yes, just pray they stay healthy.
And the last thing I'll say before you show your next chart, because I think it'll go deeper into the roster idea here, but you know, a lot of it, we say outfielders, like the elite outfielders, are so much better scoring wise than the hitters, which is not completely false. But if you look at some of those elite hitters, they're really good as well. So I keep telling myself in drafts to, it's like the roto idea. You just need the end result, however you get there. Like, don't pass on a J-Ram just so you can get an outfielder type thing. That's what I keep telling myself, instead of being stuck on having to get outfielders, sort of, in a roundabout way.
It's interesting. So I'm looking at my sheet here. The replacement level, and what I've called replacement level at each position, is the sixth player taken in each draft. So six times 12. Your replacement level infielder scores 1,034 points, or is projected for 1,034 points. Your projected replacement level pitcher is 765 points.
Oof,
that's a big difference. So, and your replacement level outfielder is right around 900 points. So pitchers, it's funny, if you just look by points, pitchers don't score as much, but also replacement level is so much worse than on the hitting side. So you have to at least try and account for that. So
yeah, and I'll add on to that once we talk about your next sheet here to kind of further my philosophy. Yes, switch over. It'll further my philosophy of how I've been going about it. Again, not saying it's the right way, but this, like, underdog best ball, it's just like regular season, but you're putting a puzzle together on how to build your team, except here you're praying for health and you're praying that they are producing later in the year also, not just, or like, you need to get to the dance, but then you have to hope they're still producing, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So what do you have here on the sheet?
All right, similar type of sheet. I'm just looking at the most common builds for overall and the successful teams, but this is just the first six rounds. So I wanted to take that same thing at the overall six, seven, and it kind of comes out for your 20 rounds or whatever. It's some combination of six, seven. We've kind of established that, and you want to go seven pitchers. But in those first six rounds, what are the most common team constructs overall and then most successfully? So I guess I'll run through some of these. The most common, again, I'm taking that difference, I'm going to compare the two, which, you know, what percentage of these builds actually were successful versus the ones that just existed, and what that difference is. The most common out there was two infielders, three outfielders, and one pitcher in the first six rounds. That is almost 18% of all teams in the Dinger contest last season. And it's almost 21% of the successful teams. So there is a 16% bump delta between those two. So this is a viable way to build a team. However, it is also the most common. But I've seen this probably in the majority of my drafts too, where most are outfield heavy and then some grab one pitcher and then the rest is like two infielders.
Yeah, no, that's a common one that I do more often than not, probably, but one I've been starting to do more. We were talking about this before the show, and that's what really stood out to me here, is it might not finish in the top 25, but it's also not very common, so it's unique. And this is where my brain shifts to DFS in a roundabout way, where we are playing a tournament, so you want to qualify, but like when you advance to the next round, you might have similar teams than the ones in there because they advanced also. Whereas in your first round, you are a unique team because no one else could draft those players, if that makes sense. But as you continue to advance, if your players are doing well enough to score that round, other teams that advance probably are as well, for the most part. It's a broad thing, could be speaking totally out of school, but the idea makes sense. So when you get down here, you still want to be unique. And that's where I look at the all column with the top 25, and then Ryan shows the percent increase. So I do a lot of 3 to 4 outfielders right out the gate. And then I start piecing it in with infielders or elite pitchers. Like one of the elite pitchers on Ryan's chart is Dylan Cease. Tons of shares of Dylan Cease right now because he throws innings, gets a lot of strikeouts, gets the quality starts, piece it together from there when it comes to underdog. But if in my mind, if I get 3 or 4 elite outfielders, I don't have to be that aggressive on outfielders the rest of the draft. Like if injuries happen. But in theory, those, even if I get 4 outfielders, that should be my 3 outfielders in my utility every week, barring something crazy happening. Yeah. So now I can focus on the rest of my draft. So I'll let you have the floor here for a bit. But I like when you brought this chart out earlier, it stood out to me like, wow, that's actually something I've been trying in the bunts right now. And I've kind of liked my builds where previously I was very anti going infielders until I like had pitching and outfield. I've been more like inclined to start to go with almost more of a 2-4-3-3 situation there.
So the second most common build, and we'll get to your, because the numbers you're good. The numbers prove out like your approach is quite solid. Like if you look at the 3 and 4 outfield builds, there are of the most common, there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different types of builds, and 4 of the 5 you actually increase your chance of being a successful team by going 3 or 4 outfielders. So some of the worst builds in terms of chances of not being a successful team is the second most common one, and this is what Sheep and Billy were helping me out with. The second most common build out there is just straight across 2 infield 2 outfield 2 pitcher. That's 16.7% of all teams last year. However, only 15.5% of those teams were successful. So you actually lowered your chance of being successful by 7% if you take 2 pitchers in the first 6 rounds. If we were to go to the bottom of this sheet, the least successful builds that are at least common, but these are only like 4.5-5% of the time, is starting with 2 or 3 pitchers. You have pretty much drastically hurt yourself in terms of your chances of being a successful team in this format. So one of the takeaways from this chart is if you take a pitcher in the first 6 rounds, just take one. Just take one. And then the most common, well, this kind of goes back to Bubba, what you were saying, the most successful build strategies in underdog last year were 0 pitchers in the first 6 rounds, and then some combination of 3-3 infield outfield or 2-4 infield outfield. Those two builds, you increase your chance of being successful by 22-24%, which is A, awesome, and B, it's unique because those two types of builds combined were only 11.5% of all types of teams in underdog last year. So that's, for me, that's the biggest takeaway that I have from this chart, is to kind of, I hate to say it, do exactly what Bubba's been doing. Stack outfield early and honestly don't take a pitcher in those first 6 rounds. You need to account for that later on by just pounding those middle rounds with pitching, because again, you need to have 7 pitchers. But the start, I mean, it's pretty clear from this data that 0 pitchers, maybe 1 pitcher, is the way to go in the first 6 rounds.
And Billy in the chat here says 0 pitcher absolutely crushed in the past years, and the draft environment didn't understand. This year pitching is going significantly cheaper, it is. And the double elite pitcher nonsense slowly dying out. Yeah, because I'll be like doing my normal outfield, infield, and there'll be like this, to me, a very high-end pitcher still sitting there. I'm like, I need to draft him, don't I? This is crazy. He's still sitting here at this point in the draft. And it's the reason why a lot of our shows, Ryan, works well is I'm the caveman, you're the data guy. So this will annoy people when I say this, but like you have the numbers that prove it in front of you, and then I give my philosophy on why I think this works. I think like a big reason why and obviously it's changing as Billy notes there as well, but like the 3-3-0 or the 1 infield 4 outfield 1 or the 2-4-0, the reason I think this makes more sense, it goes back to A, 7 of your 10 starting players are hitters. B, if you go to Ryan's sheet with the projections, and if you look at it, like, or if you even just want to do it the easiest way, they have projected totals on the underdog ADP as you're drafting. Mm-hmm. Yep. And so if you just want to do it that way, it's like going on AAV on the NFBC auction. Like, just if you want to go that way, cool. If you look at them, and you can even look at past year success, for the most part, even like your fourth rostered infielder, fifth rostered infielder, more often than not, it's going to average over 1,000 points a season. Where when you're talking pitchers, even the elite pitchers, most of them are in the 1100s, very rarely in the 1200s, and most of them don't do it multiple times. Like your great pitchers, Framber Valdez, Logan Webb, because of the quality starts they do, they're boring, but they're good in these formats. They're like 1,000, you know, 1,050, maybe get to 1,100, but they're doing good, but they're doing, like I said, like what you're, like Matt Chapman outscores them. And Matt Chapman goes so much later. Eugenio Suarez is a monster in this format. Look at his, not even just because of last year, look at his rolling seasons of points. And he goes late. So to me, when I start seeing that, the more I do the drafts, it's just like we talk about doing the, you know, the DCs or the 50s or mock drafts, kind of get a feel for the player pool. Seeing this in underdog, is it stood out to me in a big way. And that's why I've changed it as I've gone through draft season, basically, to go to. Because I was more pitcher aggressive, not like right out the gate, but I was probably more in the 2-2-2 builds out the gate. And it's changed the more I've seen the player pool. Last thing I'll say, I know I'm talking a lot, I'll give it back to you, is it's really cool. Because like the first tournaments that were out there, there were certain players missing. Like, you know, last year we didn't even have the foreign players in there yet, so on and so forth. Every time a new tournament comes out, it's like when the Bunt 2 comes out, or when the Dinger 2 comes out eventually, when the Dinger fills, whatever, they will have a whole new player pool. Like they'll add players they might have missed, and then also the ADPs will be all – like things change throughout it. So it's cool every time you get into a new, I guess, format, you get a whole different setup. So, sorry, what would you like to add to that?
I was going to show – I went back to my little projection sheet here. I wanted to throw some names to what you were talking about with this kind of thing. You can wait on pitching. So let's say you don't take a pitcher in the first six rounds, which is kind of what we'll just said to do, or maybe take one. Six times 12 is 72. So if I look at the current ADP on underdog, these are the pitchers going if you after ADP 72. So this is, again, if you wait until the seventh round to start taking your pitchers, it is Yoshinobu Yamamoto, Michael King, Jacob DeGrom. We could have a whole podcast on whether Jacob DeGrom in a best ball league, because something we haven't talked about is that whole floor versus ceiling thing. That can help in best ball a lot. That can also not. But what's that week-to-week variance? Jacob DeGrom is actually absolutely discussion worthy. But just again, to throw out some names, my guy Pablo Lopez is available after the sixth round. George Kirby, Framber Valdez, Hunter Green, Logan Webb, Shota Imanaga, Luis Castillo, Freddy Peralta. Spencer Strider, if you're wanting a second half Spencer Strider, to what I was talking about before, Tyler Glasnow, Zach Gallen. So again, I'm not going to keep going down, but those are the types of pitchers, if you do not take one in the first six rounds, that's the type of pitcher that's still available to you in round seven and beyond.
And just off the top of my head, without looking at my player shares, Freddy Peralta, Framber Valdez, Logan Webb, probably like my most rostered pitchers in that ballpark. I know I have a ton of Shota and Pablo as well. So it goes back to my roster builds. All of a sudden I get to that point and I'll pepper like two in a row or something, maybe even three in a row. And now I feel like I have two to three really good pitchers to go with my hopefully starting offense is what it comes down to. So it's just it's putting a fun puzzle together. It's a completely different puzzle than our season long roto stuff, which I love about it. It goes back to the ease of doing these drafts, which we talked about, but it's just a whole new way to, I think, enjoy fantasy. I know it's not where we're at right now, but we've talked about underdog a ton, and I just love the concept of it. It's very user friendly. You don't have to be like a diehard to just enjoy it. And if you can kind of take some pointers away from this show, Stacking Dingers, other shows, like I had Spencer Thurman on, he broke down his buddy finished third in the Dinger last year. He talked about his roster build. It's pretty wild stuff there as well. Like Paul Skeens taking those kind of gambles pays off in a big way. So yeah, really cool stuff. And seeing charts like these help a ton.
So where do you go? Because like, I mean, from here, it's kind of more player talk. But like, I mean, what were some of those interesting builds? Because I feel like one thing you want to try and do and be unique. It's hard to be unique early in drafts. But like those because I mean, all those players are getting picked in the first four rounds or whatever. Being unique at the end, like a Paul Skeens last year, I feel like that is something you want to try and do.
One of my most rostered pitchers right now is Bubba Chandler for the same reason.
Right. And I was just thinking, Bubba Chandler. I think in our Discord, we were talking about Andrew Painter, yes, who is not really going to be slow played throughout the entire first half. So like in Roto League, it's like, well, screw that. But do I take a 19th, 20th round Andrew Painter and again have someone who might be unique? I don't know how unique Andrew Painter himself is. I'm just kind of saying the example, but a kid with a ton of talent who is not, we don't think, injured right now, but should be ready in the second half just because that's the plan for him. Like, I feel like somebody like that makes a ton of sense. Maybe a little bit to a lesser extent. I'll throw Yuri Perez out there, but that's different. Yes. He is coming off of like Tommy John, so there is some more risk with that. But those types of guys, I think if you want to try and mix it up at the end of drafts, I feel like the end of drafts, tell me if I'm wrong, I feel like the end of the draft is where you want to do that and take some of these unique guys that can help you in down the stretch.
If 100%. You get that far. Yeah, you want to do that. And I will say this much, though. It's, you know, we're talking about it. We're not the only ones that do this. That's where my brain goes right away. Not just pitching, though. Like, this is the world where, sure, because you're looking for boom and bust weeks. So late in a draft, your Matt Wallners of the world, where you know they'll have a big Jock Peterson, who's outfield in this. You know, like they'll have those big weeks where they face a bunch of righties, hit 3 home runs and drive in like 10. Like those are, you won't use them all the time. But that's why you're your 6th or 7th outfielder. You only need them once in a while. Like you want those peaks and valleys. And that's where you can take those chances later, especially if you think you got a good core early. Like your Tyro Estrada's, he goes undrafted in most drafts. If you think he bounces back in Colorado, he is ridiculous as your last pick. Like insane, yeah, as your last pick. Because if you go and look at his, again, this is the lazy approach, but it's what I do just to kind of give my brain an exercise. You look at his year-by-year underdog points. When he was good with the Giants, I think he was like in the 1200s. You're getting him around 20. You don't get a lot of guys in around 20 with that kind of upside. So that's kind of where you start shooting for the moon. Pitching-wise, there's a lot of them there. You can take your gambles on young arms you think might show up. Even if it's something like, this isn't a guy I would go to pick, but kind of the philosophy, I like the Yuri Perez point. But think about like last year, like Schwellenbach came out of nowhere. Even Grant Holmes came out of nowhere. Bowden Francis came out of nowhere. So like this year, do you go and get a Cade Povich? Nope, the second half he's with the Orioles and dominates. Do you like take those kind of chances as well when it comes to pitching, not just these guys coming off of injuries, not the Painters, the Bubba Chandlers that everyone's talking about, but these guys we've seen before in the big leagues, maybe not a full sample. And they're like this, like we talked about in DC's, Ryan, they're the 6th, 7th, 8th in a rotation, which we all know that'll get utilized at some point.
I'm looking at ADP right now, and this prospects is another one where, again, like we just did in our position previews. I think I said this at PitchCon, someone like a Roman Anthony or Christian Robinson, like I'm not really interested in drafting them in a fab league because you got to wait. But I'm pretty confident that both of those guys probably up in the second half for Boston, and someone like a Christian Campbell, my bad, is basically, he has an ADP at 237, which basically means he's not being drafted, because if I do 12 times 20, there's only 240 picks in a draft. So Christian Campbell, those types of prospects, even on the hitting side, can absolutely work as well. So that's something you want to considering. And Billy in the chat here kind of agrees. He said, us underdog best ballers, weakness is capitulation to ADP. I don't know if I know what capitulation means, but people late or undrafted are a huge edge, because again, that is how you get unique. And I think your last couple picks, you can take a shot on some of those guys. One thing I want to ask you, Bubba, since you've done a ton more of these than I have, admittedly, I didn't put this on the outline or anything, but how do you handle, or how do you mix together those perceived high floor, low ceiling types with the all or nothing high ceiling, but could also do very little in other weeks, or platoon bats that don't do anything in some weeks, and then righty heavy weeks, they do a lot. How do you lean one way or the other? Do you try and mix them? How do you handle that?
I try to mix them as I'm going through my drafts. Like I'll even look at my player shares and like, okay, I have a lot of like this boring dude that I know is going to, if he stays healthy, he's going to produce for me and be in my lineup, play 12 plus weeks out of the 17, like he's going to be in it. So like I have that stability, I guess, and then I'll come through, and that's when in leagues like that, again, this is why I take these guys early, because I think these are my dudes starting every week, and it gives me the luxury I've been looking more at jocks. I've been Jock Peterson. The infield, I think, is great for taking chances because there's so much more to that compared to some of the outfielders, because the outfielder is a lot of the platoon, where the infielders, they're regular everyday guys. They're just boom or bust. And I think that's a plus in that regard. So I've been becoming more attached to it. I need to just start going YOLO in some of these and going, because at the same time, it's like you need to advance. So it's like we talked about with the playoffs, like you kind of want that safety net. But then as you advance, you need to have like the peak potential to win it all. Like if you're just content, like men cashing. Okay, cool. Like if you want to turn 10 bucks into like, you know, 100 bucks or whatever, I don't mind doing that either.
That's awesome.
Like I'm all aboard that train. But you like, you know, I've seen Sheep's drafts as he posts them on Twitter, and, you know, Nez and all these underdog guys. And you look at their lineups, and at first glance, you're just like, what the heck? But then if you start breaking it down, like on Stacking Dingers, they just did a whole episode on stacking. And there's a whole thing to that, and it makes a ton of sense. I'm not great at that. I should probably do more of it. I don't. But it's the idea of getting those peak weeks and taking advantage of it and rolling in that regard. And that goes to the taking more risk situations. Like if you're going to stack, like say you stack D-backs, like this is what I've been doing lately. So you get Corbin Carroll in round one. Okay, cool. That's awesome. So then as you're going through your draft, now you go get Josh Naylor to play first base. Okay, cool. And then you take Eugenio Suarez. Okay, these are all still pretty good guys. Now do you go for the gusto and take a boring, but in the team, Lourdes Gurriel Jr.? That's where the questions are, because he'll have his peak weeks, but if the team's popping off, he's probably going to be in your lineup. So that's where your brain has to shift. It's not easy, but that's one thing I've been trying to make a point to, is making those shifts as we go. And as Sheep taught me a couple years ago, when you're using the search function, you don't have to put players' names if you want. Just put like Dodgers, and all the Dodgers players come up, and then you can put them in your queue. So you can ignore ADP, just ignore it, and go, hey, I want to stack, or pick like four teams you want to stack and just queue all of them up and just sit in your queue page. And then just ignore the ADP and pick your team. And that's one way to try to be totally different right there as well.
You could say you can capitulate ADP.
I still don't know what that is. Yes.
It is the action of surrendering or ceasing to resist an opponent or demand. I got to use that. That's a good freaking word. It's a good word. All right.
yeah, that's kind of how I've been differentiating, I guess. And then,
okay. That's
yeah, lots of ways to go about it, basically.
Did I lose my sheet? My bad.
While you're looking for your sheet, I was gonna say, I was looking at some of the underdog ADP right now, and just like pitchers, if you want to go, like pitchers don't even get drafted if you want to take a chance. Like some do, but like if you believe Justin Verlander has an ounce of still Verlander in him and give you like eight peak weeks, he's a last pick essentially. You mentioned Yuri Perez. He's another one. If you think like Ryan Nelson's a guy I love taking late, because he might not start in the rotation, but I think he'll have a big impact as the season goes on. Ryan Nelson's one I like a ton in that one. There's just a bunch of these dudes right now, because you can take a Ryan Nelson or you take a boring Michael Lorenzen. Like, okay, Lorenzen's going to start a lot, but which one's got the bigger ceiling? Probably Ryan Nelson. Reed Detmers is another one. Take him late, see what happens. So those are the kind of things I'm looking at while you are searching for your page.
All right, I did find it. All right, so the last thing I want to kind of show is, I just think this is fascinating. We don't need to talk about like the individual players too much. We can talk takeaways of this, but this is the most commonly picked players on successful teams last season. So any team that finished in the top 25% of total points in that first round, which again, that's my definition of successful. Your mileage may vary. But these are the players who were on the highest majority of those teams. A couple of things that stand out to me, and then Bubba, we'll get your thoughts here. Out of the, geez, I can't count. Maybe there's 20. Yeah, there's 20 guys listed here. Only four of them are pitchers, and the highest pitcher is Logan Gilbert, who was 12% of successful teams. This is fascinating. Those four pitchers are Logan Gilbert, Tarik Skubal, no surprise, Dylan Cease. The fourth one is Mitch Keller, which absolutely,
I get it,
blows my mind. I had to like double check when I did this. I'm like, why the hell is Mitch Keller But like, I mean, I'll toss this back to you, but like, these guys are horses. They throw innings. Mm-hmm. Gilbert Skubal, I mean, Skubal, but like Cease was a horse last year with strikeouts, and Mitch Keller does nothing great, but he throws innings. And that was fascinating to me, that Mitch Keller at an ADP of 103 last season was one of the more heavily rostered pitchers on successful teams.
Yeah, Keller's a guy that throws a lot of innings, was coming off a couple seasons with really big strikeout numbers. Those kind of fell back a bit last year, but you know, I don't hate him either in this type of format, because you look at him right now, his ADP is 165 almost right now.
It's gone down by a lot.
Yeah. And like, I don't mind. He's 1 year, six pitchers potentially. It depends on how aggressive you are at the position later on. So I get it. He's in a team like Pittsburgh. They still have Skeens, obviously. They have Jones, hopefully Chandler, but they're going to need Keller to throw. So like, I understood that pick last year quite a bit. It is interesting, though, kind of how we were talking about, like Billy mentioned earlier, zero pitchers and all that. And if we look last year, like you mentioned, Logan Gilbert, ADP 81. So obviously that's after the rounds you talked about. Skubal 66, so he skirts right inside those first six rounds or whatever. Keller obviously does it at 103, and Cease is 72. He's right on the number. So only two of those four were even in that ballpark you were talking about of being in that first six rounds or whatever set of the potential, you know, structures to build out your teams. So it makes sense.
Another interesting thing that I saw, not too many like breaks. So if I look at the top, whatever, six guys, it's Aaron Judge, no surprise. It's Jarren Duran and Brent Rooker. Those were second and third most common among successful teams, and that makes a ton of sense. After that, it was Shohei Ohtani, Bobby Witt, and J-Ram, and Jose Ramirez. So, like, yes, obviously it helped to have a Jarren Duran, Brent Rooker type, of course. But also, I feel like one of my takeaways is, like, if you just get a legend on your team, you're in pretty good shape. Yes. Exactly. And by legend, I mean Aaron Judge, Ohtani.
Top three pick.
Exactly. Like a top three pick. Yeah. And I mean, obviously, you have to pick the right one. But I feel like, as opposed to Roto, where you can lose your first round pick and it sucks, but it's not like a death sentence. I think in Underdog, where you're only starting 10 players every single week, having one legend on your team can really make a big difference. If you have like a top five pick and you hit the right one, if Judge does what he does again, like he was the most rostered successful player.
Yep. No, and I was mad that the first sets of drafts I was doing, I was got no early picks. Then I max entered the bunt, and I think I had at least 60% of them were top three picks. I'm like, oh, this is sweet. So much better to draft. But and obviously you can build them many different ways and see what happened. But just looking at the chart here, outside of Judge, Ohtani, Witt, say Soto, and I guess I'll throw Henderson, the rest of them are all in the thousands and below. So it goes back to my comment I had earlier to you about taking these hitters early and the replacements even that you can get throughout the draft of what teams are like. Adamas had 928, Nimmo 927, William Contreras 909, Chapman 927. Like, these aren't elite numbers, but you mentioned the replacement value of pitchers. Skubal had 890. He had a Cy Young elite season, 890 points. Like,
and he scored less than King William.
That's Contreras. My point. Like, these guys, these pitchers, if they are the nuts, they're still, it's so hard for them to compete with the hitting scoring.
Yeah.
And that's why another angle of why take these guys early. Like, maybe they prove us wrong, but as a whole, you're gonna have to like hit the top percentile result on that one.
One thing I also want to bring up, so now that I didn't notice King William was on this, and this kind of dovetails into a listener question we got on the Discord from Scott. It was kind of directed to you, but how many catchers are viable in this format? And to me, it's interesting that William Contreras is on here because he is the lowest scoring hitter on this page. At 909 points scored last year, was on 12% of successful teams, but the ADP was 164. I feel like, and this is just I don't know where the other catchers are at, but I feel like they got penalized quite, at least William Contreras did, perhaps for being a catcher and going at 164 overall. He didn't score a ton of points, But again, catcher's not a position. They're infielders. It's interesting to see a catcher creep up. And I know William Contreras had a freaking awesome season for catcher, so maybe it's just a one-off. But that was at least interesting to me.
Yeah, because in the past, it was like a no-no. Like, pitching, you don't take closers because they get no points, essentially. You can maybe luck into a win. You get innings, pitch, strikeouts. You could give up earned runs. You can get negative points a lot easier as a closer than you can a lot of positive points. You used to not take catchers because you want to maximize at-bats to maximize points. That's the thing. Well, Sir William plays nearly every day, so that's a plus. And this year, he's up to an ADP of 65. So he took quite the jump. Adley Rutschman is up to 107 this year. Cal Raleigh is 162. Shea Bangaliers is 237. So he's still getting drafted because even with his poor production, still put up over 1,000 points last year due to his power numbers. And again, that's another late round guy. If you stack like Lawrence Butler and company, throw a Bangaliers in there at the end, no one's going to have that kind of stack. Like, those are ways to get unique late in your draft. Catchers are being taken more this year is where I'm getting at, which is melts my heart.
It's your life's work, man.
Melts my heart. I don't have many shares. I have been taking some Williams lately because I'll put together like a Churio, William, Yelich type build. But yeah. And I think the other reason why William might have been more popular last year, based, you know, at bats, people aren't dumb. ADP is very affordable. The Brewers team stack was super popular last year because Adamas is on this list also. Because they were cheap. Okay. They were very cheap. I remember this, like, talking with Sheep and doing some other shows. You can get, like, an Adamas, Yelich, William, and I'm blanking. I think Churio was basically free because he was a rookie. You could build a Brewers stack very, very cheap because everyone wanted Braves and teams like that. So Yankees, Dodgers, Brewers gets overlooked. And that's a whole other aspect, is try to find those mid-tier, like, Cubs stacks. I'm doing a lot of Cubs stacks right now, stuff like that. So you can build those as well.
When you say, and I guess this will kind of, because I don't have too much to add on this kind of player list, but like, I think one thing I wanted to end with was just some of the advanced strategies that are out there, just as something to think about. And then we'll pass you off to the Stacking Dingers podcast and folks to actually deep dive that kind of stuff. What is a, like, how many, what is a stack? Like, how many players on one team would you say is a stack? How many is overboard?
At least three. I know most like to do four to be a little different. I wouldn't go past four, all things considered. But okay. I think if you leave three, it's good. I know a lot of guys stack
multiple teams too.
That's the thing. I saw Sheep post one on Twitter the other day. A lot of guys, because you could do like a three team stack, essentially have a primary stack where you have like four players. Like I mentioned, my Diamondbacks one I've been doing, Carroll, Naylor, Suarez and Gurriel, because you can at least get maybe three of them to pop off. But because say a team goes off and three of those four guys are going off that week, you can get pieces of all of them, which is nice. So you make that your primary. You can do a 3-4 for a secondary and then another three, or you can have a couple twos. There's lots of ways to go about it. Like in DFS, you usually go 3-3-2. That's how I build. But in this, because you have bench spots, you can kind of fluctuate with that. Like the Pirates are an interesting one, because you can get like a Brian Reynolds and O'Neill Cruz and try to find a third. That's the hard part.
Last year, get those guys. I mean, the thing, if you're trying to maximize at bats, if you can stack at the top of a lineup.
Yes. That's the key. Like, there's lots of ways to, like, the Phillies is, if you have a back end, you can go like a Harper, Schwarber, Turner sits around for a while. So now you're two infielders, one outfielder, which is not the norm. But if you go Turner, then you go like outfield, on the way back, now you're getting back into the form type thing, but you'll have three Phillies out the gate. Like, that's doable, very doable. That's just where doing reps in these rooms, you start to see these things and do it. Like Billy just said, I did a Soto, Langford, Seager, Adley, Simeon, Viento start. So we got two Mets and four Rangers. Very doable. And one, two, three.
I feel like Rangers is
three infield, three outfield.
Not looking at ADP, but I feel like Rangers is a nice positive regression stack this year.
Oh,
like,
just that watch up, this. So here's,
and I wonder, like,
here's your ADPs. So Langford's 25, Seager's 40, Adley's 53, Simeon 58, Berger's 123, Evan Carter 149, Jock 175. So depending on how you want to put it together, if you want to go top heavy like Billy did, or you can get like a Langford, Seager or whatever, and then piece it together with Berger and Carter or Peterson later, yeah, you can do that.
Okay.
And all, and literally, like I told you guys, I just typed in Texas and all Rangers players just came up for me.
That's very handy.
Yes. So, yeah.
Okay. Anything else on Stack? No, that's, I mean, this is again, just kind of an intro to some of the more advanced stuff that, that you like to think through. Do you, it's just kind of, so to go, not to go back to naming the rounds and what weeks they are, but in the dinger.
I got the dinger page up right here. Let me double check.
Yep, all right. Dinger. But basically round one is 17 weeks long and you have to get through it to get to round two, but rounds two, three and four are just 2 weeks each. So basically a 17 week round one is the same as a 2 week round two. Do people out there, do you look at those schedules in weeks 18 through 23 and try and build with or stack teams that have schedules where they have seven game weeks that week, if that's even forecastable? The schedule's out there, you can see it, but I don't know, just something that entered my mind.
I know the NFL, they do, and they talk about that all the time on these NFL underdog chats, and it makes sense because it's a shorter sample.
One-on-one, yeah.
Yeah, you can do that a lot more. I don't, because so much turnover by then. I just want to get there. The biggest thing I guess you can think about there, because like Spencer mentioned it on Bench with Bubba, it's hard still to predict, but those two start pitchers and those 2 week samples are so much more important. Like so much more important.
Yeah, yeah.
So that goes back to the, if you're taking like a late pitcher gamble, at least take a guy that's kind of got some longevity to him, if that makes sense. So that's when you want them showing up. Can we, even if it's 2 5 inning starts, you prefer the quality starts, but if he can give you 10 innings, like 3 runs and 10 Ks, that's still better than one start, obviously. So you need those kind of pieces. Like the hitting's the hitting. You hope it survives. That's one reason you're stacking. If it's a great team, they should be hitting all year. Hopefully things happen. It's like, this is where the reason I hate head-to-head starts to show up, because you have a great team and it just could fall apart for a week. But the pitching is almost more important in the small sample, if that makes sense. So it's tricky. Now, how do you plan for that with days off and guys getting stuff? That's tricky.
Yeah. Okay.
Right. Scott Burks in the chat said, what are the advantages to stack? I think it's to maximize potential. I think the stacks are even more important in the last three rounds, personally.
And I mean, I would think too, just if you hit the right one, you just have some offense that can't be stopped. It's driving each other in runs and RBI, and just and you're in a lineup that then churns the lineup over for a fifth or sixth time. If it's a great offensive night, if you can get the right team, the number of players on that right team that does that, that's the advantage, is they just build on each other and you get more plate appearances from it.
I think a few years ago when the Jays went off and you had Bichette and Vladdy and Simeon and Teoscar, I think if you had, they were all cheap in NFBC, they were definitely cheap in underdog. Like those guys had to roll for you.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Do you look at, so, and Billy says best ball format replaces your low weeks. I kind of asked this a little bit earlier, but like that high variance type of player, and actually something that just came to mind, like Baseball HQ has a weekly hitter consistency score where they do how many weeks were you dominant and how many weeks were you a disaster. I might want to look at that. Yeah. But that's just another, that's a key part of best ball, is your really crappy weeks or a zero. If you've got enough players to make it count, those bad weeks don't count. It's not a Bailey Ober in the first week of the season giving up 7 runs and you're screwed. It's just that doesn't count. So, again, that's kind of a best ball basic, but that is kind of the case for taking some of these high variance guys, is you get their good weeks and their bad weeks don't count, assuming you have enough healthy bodies to backfill. But
yeah, and I might have missed Billy and them doing it already this year, but I know baseball, Chris, over the last couple of years, during the offseason, he brings a sheet. We talked about it a few years ago, so he got creative with it, was looking at like Brian Reynolds versus so-and-so. Or it was like Steven Kwan's another guy, because they're just consistently putting up points because they top of the order, good OBP skills, so on and so forth. But is it worth taking them being good 14 weeks, just being good? Or is it worth taking, you know, Jock Peterson, who's great for like 9 weeks?
Yeah.
Like those kind of questions. And I know they've done a lot of the research on it. I'm curious how last year's numbers came out. I haven't seen that yet. But it's kind of going to what you're talking about with the HQ ratings. It's maximizing. You'd almost rather have a guy that's out of the 17-week span that's like peaks 11 times compared to a guy that's like a floor 15 times, if that makes sense. you want to just crush.
I just wonder, and I'm thinking out loud, like, is that a something that's sticky that we can project how volatile certain hitters are?
It's like Billy says right here.
So I don't know.
Luis Urias needs to be devalued because he isn't adding to the ceiling.
Yeah, Luis Urias.
More Luis Urias slander on the show, and I'm here for it. So yes, as you were.
Even though he's a ping pong partner with our guy,
Luis he's getting smoked by the gun show Luis Rengifo on Instagram. God, it's bad for morale. But So
I don't know. Anything else just kind of advanced strategy wise, at least just to throw out there?
I'll think of stuff once we sign off. But I think we hit the key parts. I know, like I said, I'll think of something when we sign off, but we'll be doing more live shows. We can spitball stuff there. Obviously the Stacking Dinger guys are awesome. So go check Stacking Dingers. So go check them out. They're great. The Sheep does the Sheep Seats on Friday night where he drafts and has guests on there. There's a lot more good Underdog content coming around these days, which is great to see. And if you're new to Underdog, go check it out and use promo code Bubba Bloom, all one word. Get a first time deposit match up to $1,000. So go check that out as well.
Yep. And I would jump in a draft. I mean, they're easy. I do it on my phone. You do it on your phone. They're very simple. Just load the draft room with the whatever rankings you want to use and just get in there and have fun with it. They're generally pretty low cost of entry, a lot of the contests. And it's just a really fun way to kind of pass time. And if you want to get deeper and deeper, that's the beauty of the game. I think of best ball is that on the surface, it's very simple to follow and understand, but like some of the things we've been talking about, once you kind of peel back that onion, it can get very strategic. So you kind of get the best of both worlds with it.
All right. Well, we actually covered all the listener questions from the Discord throughout the show. So we're good there. Final thoughts. You kind of just gave some, but it's fun. We're going to, like I said, we'll have some more drafts. If you're in the Discord, we'll let you know when we're going to record one very, very soon. So be ready for that. But anything else?
Yeah, we'll put some of these thoughts into practice and see what happens. So fun show. Little change of pace from our normal 5x5 stuff. Just want to throw out a little different format for everyone out there and hope you all enjoyed it.
Yeah. And again, we'll have more content throughout the season on this. When they get their season total stuff out, we'll have some fun with that on Underdog as well. And be doing some drafts up to the season and in season and other stuff there. So check it out. All that fun stuff. We'll be back with you guys later this week with, we're going to go head to head, essentially talking about our top, because we just dropped our SP rankings on the Patreon. So we're going to do our top 20-ish, depending on time, starting pitchers, how I have them ranked, how Ryan has them ranked, first current ADP as well. So we're gonna have fun in those discussions, because after the we talked about it in the Discord a bit, after like the top X amount, it's a giant glob of what do you like today. So we'll get you that later this week, and maybe a surprise before next week, we'll see. But until then, we need five more players in the listener leagues to get us 10 full in there. So come check that out too. But check out Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, on Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom. And I'm at BD Intrick. This is Bubba and the Bloom, episode 210. Catch you all next time.